Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 24th of November, Anno Domini 2018, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour. We're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes the news. And, of course, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Or toll free at 1-800-790-0415. I hope you all had a great Thanksgiving, and I'm sure you're all just coming out of your tryptophan comas. And here comes the news. Two related Office 2010 non-security patches issued on November 6th have been pulled. These patches are both related to changes coming in the Japanese calendar next month, attributed to the abdication of Emperor Akihito in favor of his son, Naruhito. The event has been compared to the Y2K problem in the West. It's not clear why two patches were released on November 6th to accommodate that calendar change, but both KB articles now sport the admonition, after you install this update, you may experience crashes in Microsoft Access or other applications. To resolve this issue, uninstall the update by following the instructions in the More Information section. This update is no longer available. Windows observers claim that the problem is more widespread. For example, here's one note. Please note that this update, KB4461522, caused an error. Entry point not found. The procedure entry point get date format X could not be located in the dynamic link library kernel 32.dll. When you run Office 2010 32-bit, Word, Excel, and others when working with Windows XP. Accordingly, those patches have been pulled from the Microsoft catalog. There's no indication when they'll be back. Also on Friday, Microsoft officially confirmed that the November Outlook 2010 security patch causes the 64-bit version of Outlook 2010 to crash or freeze on startup. It's a problem we've known about since Wednesday, the day after the patch was released. The KB article has been modified to say after you install the 64-bit version of this security update, Outlook may crash on startup.
Well, it's pretty secure if you can't run it.
It is that. A separate advisory states, after updating Outlook 2010 in the November 2018 public update KB4461529, Outlook crashes or closes suddenly on startup. The issue only affects 64-bit installations of Outlook 2010. Microsoft is investigating the issue, and we will update this page with further details as they become available. As a workaround, you could try to use Outlook Web Access. Caution, we do not recommend removing security update KB4461529 because, you know, that might result in you being able to run Outlook, which is not something you should do. It's a bizarre turn of events. The patch covers four separate security holes in Outlook 2010. All four of those security weaknesses are rated important, which means they're not, and have no known exploits or public disclosures. While Microsoft figures out a way to fix, you're instructed to use a product that doesn't look or act one whole heck of a lot like Outlook 2010. Adding insult to injury, at the time of the advisory, Office 365 Outlook web access using multi-factor authentication was down. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Microsoft yanked a bunch of patches? And your choices are, oh no, Mr. Bill. Typical, Microsoft does patches, and get a real OS in Office Suite. So far, we've got 19 votes. Get a real OS in Office Suite is number one. On the other hand, most of you call up have Windows problems, so either somebody's lying or people who call don't take the poll and vice versa. But I know you'll have a lot more to say about this. So if you scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff, the link to the forums is there. And the second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, the first item under the poll discussion is 24 November 18, Microsoft yanked a bunch of patches, and you can join us in the discussion there. Microsoft has a serious issue. Every single month this year, their patches have either been bad or pulled back or
crashed
something.
Patches need patching.
Or at least, at least this one doesn't actually delete your data like the 1809 bug did.
Well, no. So they're getting better is what you're saying?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, how is it any better? You can't work on it.
It really is a serious issue, and I'm not entirely certain how or when they're going to fix it. It seems to me, at least, that it is something systemic in Microsoft's system, in their whole way of doing things.
Think they would be on this like white on rice right now. I mean, you know, wanting to correct it as fast as they could and not sit there and just, it's broken. Yeah, we'll get around to fixing it.
Well, right. I'm sure they're working on it quite diligently, but what we hear at our end is, it's broken, we'll fix it.
Yeah, their lack of concern or, you know, empathy for the folks out there that are putting these patches in and constantly having to do, oh, that doesn't work, and, oh, yeah, well, try this. Oh, that doesn't work.
And the problem is people are going to get afraid of installing patches, which is rough because a lot of patches fix serious problems.
Right.
But the patches have to be good before you install them.
Yep. And that's whoever just called back. We seem to have missed that call.
Yeah, I had a customer bringing a computer this week that hasn't installed any updates in 10 years.
Yeah.
And, everything is working. Well, not anymore.
Yeah.
But all the bug fixes and security patches you don't have.
Yeah, who knows what's been happening inside your machine.
And then on the other side, customers having problems and their Microsoft Office was taking too long to launch. And so they were told on the support line, well, let's just install the latest version. That requires even more resources than the old version did.
Right, right, right.
So updating is not always the answer, but at least, you know, don't be too far behind.
Well, right, right. It's a real issue right now. Part of the problem, of course, is people believe they must run Windows and they must run Office. You can run a different operating system. If you insist on running Windows, you can also run LibreOffice. You can certainly, you know, use a Chromebook. There's all kinds of things you can do instead of slavishly running Windows and Office. But if you are going to run Windows and you are going to run Office, keep them up to date. We say keep them up to date. Don't be first.
It's kind of hard.
Yeah.
Don't be first. Wait till, you know, you hear what other people have gone through, like this particular patch. They insist that you run it because it apparently fixes a problem nobody's having. But when you do fix it, it then makes things like Access.
Breaks more stuff.
And one of the problems, we were just talking about this on Security Now last week or so, Windows Home updates automatically, and you almost can't defer it.
Right.
Windows Pro, There's a policy where you can say wait 2 weeks before you install an update, so you don't get it first, and you wait until everyone else fixes the problems.
In case they pull it, right. You'd be a lot far.
And so why doesn't Windows Home have that option of waiting to let other people find the problems? Because they want you to buy Windows Pro.
Microsoft doesn't make mistakes.
Yep.
And they just, it's easier for them.
They don't make stable product either.
You know, I run Linux, and it updates. Something updates daily, right? But once you say go ahead and update, it happens in the background.
Mm-hmm.
I rarely ever have to reboot. Stuff just install, and so I don't. You know, I'm very happy to hit that little button, and I'm very happy to let it happen in the background, and I don't have to stop
working.
Just
does it automatically, and it's there.
Right. Unless I'm up to, like the other day, there was an update to the Chrome browser. Well, I had, you got to close it to update it. Okay. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, I didn't have to stop working. I didn't have to do a thing.
Yep.
But for some reason, Microsoft just everything reboots. Oh, we changed the, I don't know, the
whatever.
Well, because everything's in the kernel.
Yeah, exactly.
They moved everything to the kernel to make it faster.
Exactly. I don't know. It's just horrible. All right. To the phones. Our first caller is Andy from Greece, New York. Hi, Andy. What's up?
Hey, Nick. Hope everybody had a good Thanksgiving.
Hope you did, too.
Oh, we did. Was doing my usual run-through of the Avast and Millibytes and ISIP Super Anti-Spyware. And Avast comes up and tells me that there's a vulnerability in my network, and I'm vulnerable to attacks from other computers on my network. If it's literally meaning my network in my home, then I don't have to worry too much because I don't think my wife's going to attack my computer from her computer.
If she did, she'd be using a hammer.
Yeah, that's about it. But I don't worry about the two Chromebooks because they're mine. But it came up, and I saw I looked into it a little further, and it said type was DNS, port was 53, and it gave me a vulnerability ID. And so I looked at that, and I did go out. I checked the router. It's on automatic updates, but I hit the manual update button and said, you're up to date. So there's no help there. But it gave me this ID. It was C as in Charles, V as in Victor, E as in Edward, -2017-14491.
Say that again, CVS.
Okay,
CVE.
CVE.
Yeah, Charlie Victor Edward -2017-14491.
So that was the 14,491 vulnerability found in 2017.
Oh boy.
Yeah, that's what that numbering means.
Okay.
All right, so let's see what it is. It is a critical CVSS.
Yeah, a maliciously crafted DNS response. So normally, you probably know this, but for our listening audience, when you type in google.com, your computer doesn't know Google. So it looks up in the DNS, the domain name server, what Google's address really is. It's kind of like the phone book for the internet. DNS is not encrypted. So bad guys have figured out a way to make fake DNS queries and malicious DNS queries. So normally you type google.com, the DNS comes back and says, here's the address. A malicious DNS can flood your computer with so much data on that DNS return that it denies you doing anything else. So that's why they call it a denial of service. And it's your DNS provider that needs to be updated.
Oh.
Right. Now, you are providing DNS through your router to the systems internally on your system, on your machine.
Okay.
So the vulnerability is correct. It may well be that your router does not, in fact, have the update that's needed to prevent that from happening. But it has to happen from inside your own network.
So one of your computers would have to be infected by something else to exploit this DNS vulnerability.
So the likelihood is narrow.
Okay.
Slim. So it's not necessarily something I'd worry about. It's certainly something, if you're in a corporate environment, your tech people need to deal with all of the routers on the network.
And whose DNS are you using in your router?
That's a Linksys router.
Well, no, it provides DNS services internally, but it also gets DNS services externally. So you need to take a look, you know, as I'm sure you know, there's a web interface to your router.
Yep.
In there is a link to the DNS servers.
Most people just use the DNS that their internet service provider provides.
Yeah.
That may be where the problem is lying as well. The upstream DNS. You said you're running Linux. I'm on that CVE listing. It gives you a list of different Linuxes that have fixed the problem, but it's most likely the Linux in the router.
It's Linksys.
No, Linksys is the router.
Right.
He's running Windows.
I've got two Windows boxes and two Chromebooks.
Okay.
And assorted phones and et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
If I go into the router itself and look at the DNS service, I can actually see where I'm getting it from.
Right. You'll see IP addresses, right? And then you could use a utility like Whois look up who runs that. I will tell you that personally, I run Google's DNSs and Cloudflare's DNS because they're very, very fast.
1.1.1.1.
That's Cloudflare.
Yep.
And 8.8.8.8 and 8.8.4.4 are Google.
Okay, slow down. All right, Google DNS is
8.8.8.8.
Okay, 4.8s.
4.8s, and then 2.8s and 2.4s. 8.8.4.4.
All right, so 8.8.8.8 and 8.8.44.
Right, and Cloudflare is 4.1s. 1.1.1.1.
Yeah. That's just it? Cloudflare is only one, there's only four numbers?
All DNS, or all IPs are only four numbers.
Well, all IPv4 is four numbers.
Yeah, he was talking about two sets.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, so what you're saying then is Google DNS has two different, the quadruple eight and the two.
Right, they have a fallback. Cloudflare does not at the moment.
Second
right.
Gateway.
Yeah. Right, they have multiple gateways.
Okay.
For those of you who don't know, DNS is the domain name services. When you type in something like google.com, your computer goes, I don't have any idea what that is. Let me ask somebody. And it goes out to the DNS service and says, what's google.com? And the DNS service comes back and says, oh, google.com actually means this number, whatever the IP address is. And that's the domain name services function. There are many domain name servers out there. Every internet service provider runs at least one. Everybody should have backups. But there are a couple of universal ones out there. Google runs one. Cloudflare runs one. A couple of other places do. Currently, at least, the two fastest DNS services I've found are Cloudflare and Google. So I've set up my router to use those, and it does speed things up, not significantly. I mean, you know, half a second here, a quarter of a second there, but that's still a lot.
And it can look it up.
One over the other?
No, I put all three in, and so it can fall back. If one is busy, it gets it from another.
And I'm going to post a link. GRC has a DNS benchmarking tool that will find the fastest DNS for you. And one of the reasons it can make web browsing faster is you look at a web page, there might be hundreds of links on that page loading assets, text and graphics and ads and whatnot. And many of those will have to do a DNS query. So you might open a web page and there's 100 queries. And so having a faster DNS, even if it's a quarter second faster, Times 100
is a pretty decent number.
Yeah.
Yes, and I found which ones were fastest for me because on Linux, there is a program called NameBench. And NameBench does essentially that same thing. So I said NameBench, and I gave it a bunch of IP addresses, including DNS addresses, including 1.1.1.1, 8.8.8, et cetera, et cetera. And it came back and said those were the three fastest. So that's why I use them. But certainly your internet service provider may be fast enough. I'm not saying they're not 10 seconds to get a response. They're just a little slower than the ones I use. But the main thing to understand is that that error message you got is really talking about your router and any internal machines. Your internet service provider has their own set of routers and needed to do their own maintenance to them at that next level, and then whoever is the next level above them and the next level above them, and et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. I'm finding that Linksys is not real fast on updates.
No, they're not. Although they had one a short while ago for a vulnerability. But yeah, most of them are not terribly fast anymore. I have a Netgear Orbi, and it just updated the other day as well, but it's certainly not something that updates super regularly.
I just read a story on GRC security. If you're interested in internet security, GRC Security Now podcast is amazing. A researcher found a vulnerability in 8 or 9 different models of D-Link router.
Right.
And responsibly reported it to D-Link before going public with it. D-Link says, yeah, okay, we're going to patch 2 of those. The other 6, when they're end of life, we're not going to bother. A year later, they still haven't released the patch. They said they were going to. And so these D-Link routers are still vulnerable.
Right. So there's just a lot. There's a lot in terms of the fact that you don't, it's the same with phones. You know, we talk about, Dave has a Pixel phone, so he gets updates directly from Google.
Mm-hmm.
I have a Verizon, I have a Galaxy S5, so Samsung has to get the Google updates first, then they screw around with them, and then they pass them on to Verizon, and Verizon screws around with them, and then I get them. So the same is true of many routers. Some update quite regularly because the people are very interested in doing it. D-Link apparently is not.
It's almost a shame that, you know, the commercial home router companies, they sell you a box and that's the end of it. Even the bigger name brand ones don't update as often as they should. But then you go to some of the enterprise class ones. MikroTik has some huge vulnerabilities,
yep,
in some of their routers. I don't know. Cisco routers are, you know, the backbone of the internet. They have vulnerabilities, but at least they seem to patch them a little faster.
They patch them fairly quickly. Yes.
But you're going to pay $1,000 for a router,
yeah. Right?
Ouch.
Well, yeah. And the other thing is, it depends on how new your router is. Many older routers, you have to go to the website, download the patch, and then upload it to your router.
Yep.
The newer ones at least, right, but the newer ones at least will do that part on their own. So that's something.
Yeah, you go to that button and it says check for updates, and it takes you to the website to make you find the right update.
Right.
Why?
Yeah.
Right.
Why shouldn't it know?
The one I've got, when I hit it actually goes out and comes back and says, nope, you're current.
Yeah. So, yes, that's a newer one, and that's good. But, yeah, so it's very hard to find a really decent router at a low cost, and certainly it has to be a fairly new router at least a mid cost in order to know that you're getting. It's the same thing with the phones. You know, yeah. If I've got a $400 phone, he's got an $800 phone.
Yeah,
that one's going to be updated faster than mine. That's easy.
Matter of fact, Wednesday. Wednesday morning, I go to grab my phone off the charger, and it says, oh, you got to reboot. We just updated you to Android 9.
There you go.
Oh, okay. So just restarted it, and boom, there it went.
Right. I will never see Android 9.
Do you recommend replacing your routers?
It depends. If you've got a good router that hasn't had any vulnerabilities and does everything you needed to do, keep it. But, you know, if you find it's got vulnerabilities like D-Link and they haven't been patched in a year like D-Link, replace it. We got to go.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks. Going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you, 29 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 35 minutes after the hour. We are Sound Bites, and we have Dennis from Rochester, New York on the line. Hiya, Dennis. What's up?
Well, I got something for Steve, a situation I'm going to describe, and I want to get his feedback, his thoughts on it. I bought an iPhone 6S about 3-4 months ago from my carrier, which was Consumer Cellular. Recently, the vibrate function on it stopped working, so I found a phone number for Apple. I called them. They opened up a case. We worked on it for probably almost an hour. I allowed the tech to get into my phone. She went through a lot of different checks. Actually, before she even went into my phone, she did a diagnostic from her, wherever she was, to my phone, and she said the diagnostic checked out properly. At the end of all this, she said, "Well, she said I'm gonna get you a new phone." She said, and she gave me a choice of having me sending the phone in, and then them sending me one back, doing express delivery, and they would hold my credit card. And the third choice was to go to a big box store here in Rochester and swap out the phone there. So I go to the big box store, and they say, "No, you can't get a new phone. We have to send it out for repair." And so is that a store policy? Is that, in fact, Apple's policy? Was she wrong? And so I'm a little confused.
Well, part of the problem is the big box stores may not have an iPhone repair person on staff. If you take it to Apple, you're more likely to get it repaired immediately. And one of the problems we've run into, especially on the 6S, is that's when they started adding the fingerprint reader, if I remember right. And that makes it harder to repair for non-Apple service centers.
Well, but she specifically said I was entitled to a swap. So why would I have to worry about a repair when she said I could go to the store and swap it out?
She was overstating the policy. Policy is always to repair. If that store has a repair department. So at our store, we can do some iPhone repairs internally. Some iPhone repairs we have to send into Apple.
And that's true of the Apple Store, too.
Right. But the Apple Store can do more repairs
more,
themselves.
But there's still some.
And you didn't get it from that store. I mean, that's back like the old days. You know, I had the business, and somebody needed a new CD-ROM drive. They bought the CD-ROM drive online, and they were told, take it to the store, you know, get it exchanged. So they bring it into my store. I go, "Yeah, no, you didn't buy it from me. I'm not going to take it.
Right.
You got to send it back to where you got it from."
Right.
And it's sure the vibrator is what Apple calls a whole unit repair. And so the repair is to replace the unit. There are some parts that can be replaced and you get the same unit back. There are more parts that you get a whole unit replacement.
When you say a unit replacement, are you talking about replacement of the whole phone or replacement of an assembly or a circuit board, partial circuit board inside the phone?
Yeah, the whole unit replacement is the whole phone.
Okay, so I'm going to go. I guess what I'm going to do is, she after this was all over, she sent me her phone number with a direct, like, I don't know, 6 or 8 number extension even. And she said, "If you have any problems, call me back." So I'm going to call her back and have her do an express delivery and let her take my credit card number and to ensure that I send my phone back.
They send you a replacement phone and you send your old one back, yeah.
Yeah, and because I'm a technician and I'm on call 24/7 and I need this phone, I can't just give my phone up and have somebody send it out for repair.
At our store, if the phone's under warranty, you would get a loaner phone during the repair. At the Apple store, they might be able to do the replacement immediately while you wait.
You are not an Apple store per se?
We're an independent Apple service center.
Okay. Where is there an Apple store in Rochester then?
Eastview Mall.
Okay. Well, you've answered a lot of my questions then. Thank you very much. Appreciate your time.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
And my store is actually open till 5 today with a lot of the sales for the holidays.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of sales, and many of them continue through the weekend. Of course, a lot of people are waiting for Cyber Monday.
Which doesn't make sense anymore because we all have high bandwidth internet.
Right.
You don't have to go back to work to buy stuff.
Right. But a lot of people are waiting for Cyber Monday when they can order. And again, that's something that doesn't matter so much anymore. Yep. You're right. Exactly. But they're waiting to do that. I don't know why it specifically anymore. Well, my daughter, of course, has already sent her Christmas wish list. she just pointed me to an Amazon wish list.
What's interesting is I want to keep track of all the prices before Black Friday, the prices on Black Friday, the prices on Cyber Monday, to see if there are real deals.
Well, you know, they were saying, though, even for Black Friday, not as many people, you know, you didn't hear the folks camping out overnight mm-hmm. for this or that. And a lot of places it's Black Friday, so yeah, you go in for this sale, but not the mad rush like in years past. I mean, because of the internet and
shopping online,
yeah, they can just do it in the comfort of the home. Heck with getting up at, you know, dark 30 and standing in line, freezing your butt off, and the crowds rushing in, and that I can get it and order it right here at the comforts of my home.
That's exactly right.
So far this year, on the Black Friday death count, we have had one death and 6 injuries reported by people.
This year.
This year alone, yep.
Yeah. Good to know.
Yeah, but not the hordes of, you know, crowds like you've seen in years past. You know, they go, well, we'll go to this city or go to this city and see the folks, you know, trampling each other
right
to get in. It's just like, yeah, no.
In Memphis, somebody glanced at an attractive woman and her boyfriend shot them.
Yeah, yeah. What happens is there are often in-store only sales, and that does indeed bring people to the store mm-hmm. if they want that one item. But most things you can find an equivalent price online.
In fact, a lot of those doorbuster sales you could order online.
Yeah, ahead
right.
of time.
Yeah,
ahead of time.
Right.
A couple of stores I was looking at Wednesday. What was it? Wednesday at 10, the sale went live online, so you didn't even have to wait for the store to open Thursday.
Right.
Well, I went over to Home Depot on Black Friday there. What was it? About 8 o'clock. Walked in, you know, and there wasn't the big crowd, you know, the parking lots. I mean, they got their normal rush in the morning for the poinsettia plants. That's always their big loss leader.
Right.
After that, it was just, yeah, people coming in, yeah, because you can order so much stuff. Now it's like,
I did have a friend who said she went to a store specifically because they had a flat screen TV that she wanted.
TVs were big this year, yeah. $400 bucks for a 65-inch 4K smart TV.
Yeah, so she stood mm-hmm. in line for that, and they only had 10. She got the last one. They did tickets.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they hand out tickets in line. She got the last ticket. And the guy handed it to her and said, whispered to her, "This is the last ticket." And then just quickly walked away.
No, you'd think they'd tell the other people not to bother waiting in line. Well, because you want them to come
in. No, they want them to come in.
But then when they're so angry and often violent when they can't get the thing they wanted.
Well, if they can't get the 65-inch, maybe they'll go for the 60.
Yeah. Well, that's the
Or the 55,
in,
yeah.
In fact, another friend of mine had that same thing happen. Wanted a 24-inch.
I saw those for $99.
Well, right. And it didn't, you know, those were sold out, so went one up, which is, as far as the store is concerned, the best idea, right? So they paid $139 or $159 or whatever it was the next price point up for a slightly larger
And they
television.
Don't mind that, you know, going up. Oh, okay, it's a little bit bigger screen. I'll pay a little bit more.
Right.
They don't
right.
mind that as much.
I'm here now. I might as well get it. That's the whole point. That's the as long mm-hmm. as you get them in the door, the likelihood that you will sell them something has increased.
Yeah.
One of the stores I was looking at, they had two different brands on sale, so maybe more units per sale.
Right. Decades ago, we were taking our first trip with my daughter to Arizona. She was five, six, something like that. And I wanted to get a portable DVD player. Going to get a portable DVD player for the plane. 8 hours on the plane, you better have something that's going to amuse this kid.
Mm-hmm.
So they
before
had
tablets.
Exactly right. So I stood in line, you know, dark 30, got in the door, went up to the counter. They didn't even have a stand. You went up to the counter and asked. And the lady in front of me is screaming. She wanted to buy 5 of them, and the deal was 1 per customer. And she was just screaming and yelling and throwing things that were on the counter and swearing and abusing it. They finally got a manager to come and take her away. And I was next in line, and the guy said, "What do you want?" And I said, "Well, originally I wanted 2 DVD players, but I guess not." He said, "You can have 2." He sold me 2 of them and said it loud enough so that the lady heard it.
Yeah. Well, he got yours because he was nice.
But he would be right. Right. Yeah. That's essentially what he said. He said, "You were polite," which is actually a good thing because of the 2 of them, one of them didn't, the internal video didn't work. Oh. I could hook it up externally to something, but mm-hmm. the internal video didn't work. And the whole point is, it was one of those little things with an internal right. clamshell for the plane. Yeah. Right. So mm-hmm. luckily I got 2.
Yeah, really.
And it's under warranty, so you can get the second one fixed.
And I did, but yes, but that would not have happened in time for the airplane flight. Yeah. So yeah, but yeah, I mean, that's the other thing.
It's
people, if you're going out shopping this holiday season, be nice. It's nice. June says it's nice to be nice. And it is, because you trap more flies with honey. You know the mm-hmm. stories.
Those people probably don't want to be working.
They don't want to be working, and if you're rude to them, you think that's going to get you farther? It's not. It's just going to make people dig in their heels and get mule stubborn. And if you're polite to them, they'll be polite back.
You know, that's one thing that still ticks me off. I'm sorry.
Uh-oh.
There we go. There's Christmas and Thanksgiving.
Yes, there is.
Those 2 days are meant to be with family.
Yes, they are.
And I feel bad for the poor SOBs that have to go to work on Thanksgiving Day.
Well, I hope
just because that corporation has yep. to open up and make a few $100 because they don't want to lose out. They're going to...
I hope they ask for volunteers. So I had to run to Wegmans to grab some cranberry sauce because, obviously, we didn't have enough.
Sure.
And I thanked the cashier for working.
Yeah. Yes, you did.
And
that.
It was Wegmans closed at 4 near us, and we were joking because as I was leaving, they were putting up the cart barricade.
Oh yeah.
And
yeah.
I said, "What do you bet someone's going to push that out of the way to get in?"
Oh yeah, it happens every year.
But these department stores that have to open up, you know. We open up at 5:00, you know, or 4 yeah, in the afternoon.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, you know, close for 1 day so people can stay home with their right. families.
Christmas
you got
is
Black
different.
Friday.
Right. Christmas is different. There are a lot of people who don't celebrate Christmas.
True.
They can work that day. I don't. That's a whole separate issue. But you're right. Thanksgiving is a national holiday. We should treat it as such.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree with you. I absolutely agree with you. That's one of the reasons I stopped selling computers, because I suddenly was at some guy's house fixing his computer on Easter Sunday, thinking my wife's home with family and friends, and she's doing all the work. And I'm here. The hell with this. I'm done.
Yeah. I've done some Christmas Day and New Year's Day.
Yeah.
Well, like you say, Steve, though, you know, folks is asked, mm-hmm. you know, and it's like, you know, if the boss goes, "Well, we need some volunteers for it," it's like. You know, even if I was just going to stay home and do nothing, you know, you're being guilted in to right. coming in and working because you don't want to, you know.
Yep. No, I get it. I completely agree. But for those of you listening, if you're going to be out shopping this holiday season, please be polite. It takes so little to do it, and it makes the other person's day, and it makes... Everything just grease the skids, slide along a little faster. Everybody's happier. Everybody's calmer. Everybody's blood pressure is lower. It's a very good thing to do. Just be polite.
And the cashier's not responsible for the prices.
Right.
If it's scanned wrong, take the ad with you.
Right.
So you can show them it's scanned wrong.
The cashier says, "We're out of that." It's not their fault.
Yep.
They're not hoarding 30 of them in the back room because they hate you.
Yeah.
Or if someone set the $50 thing down on top of a shelf that said $2, that's not their fault either.
Right.
Yeah.
It's just, be polite. I understand everybody's under pressure. But there's, you know.
Or they bring it up to the cashier, you know, the last item, and they, "I wanted this, but it's broken." What's the cashier's
okay.
Sorry, you know.
Discount because it's broken.
Yeah, I want to discount because it's broken. You can't use it because it's broken.
Customer service desk, maybe, but the cashier has no authority over that.
Right, right, right. You're in the wrong place. Right, right.
I've always joked that everyone should be required to be a waitress in a restaurant and a clerk in a retail store.
Yes, I've been both. And trust me, I've learned to be polite to the people who do that stuff because they're the worst jobs. They're just the worst.
Well, when I was at Home Depot, you'd get some folks with attitudes, you know.
Oh, yeah. Like,
really?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, look, when you have almost no control over your life, when you're a petty little nobody, and you suddenly have a little bit of control, I'm buying something and you're serving me, it goes to some people's heads.
Yeah.
You know?
Unfortunately.
And I get that. I do.
You're
but
right.
I don't need to be on the receiving end of that anymore. So I don't do that anymore. So people, be polite. It's nice to be nice. Go be nice to somebody today. That's
doesn't
important.
Doesn't take that much of an effort. And why put yourself in a bad mood?
And if people don't treat you nicely, there's probably a reason.
That's right. That's right. You think by treating somebody nasty, they're going to treat you nice in return? I'm pretty sure it doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
It certainly never worked that way with me.
It hasn't for me.
Although I have read stories about the nicer you and more polite you are to them, the angrier they get and it gets funnier.
Yes.
It goes totally the opposite.
Always be polite to people who are angry at you. It just angers them.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Especially if you stand there and smile.
That's right. I'm sorry, sir. I have no control over that. I wish I did, but I do not. Is there something else I may help you with? Well, what are you going to do to fix it? I cannot fix it, sir. Thank you. Thank you for understanding.
Well, I'm not leaving here till you fix it. Well, sir, you're going to be standing here a very long time.
Long time.
Well, sir, sleeping bags are in aisle 4. It's pretty much the best we're going to do for you at this point.
But you have to pay for them first. You can just bring that right up to the counter when you're ready.
Yep.
Have a nice day.
Have a nice day. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Oh.
I did one New Year's Eve. My boss said, stay open till 6. Blizzard, horrible, horrible, horrible weather. I was selling at the computer center at the time, and he said, I don't want to. I got family and friends coming over for New Year's Eve, and I want to be home. He said, stay open till 6. I said, I don't want to. He said, if you stay open till 6, I will give you all of the profit of anything you sell. Well, I knew I wasn't going to win anyway, so I said, okay, we'll do that. And remember, back then, margins were high.
Yeah.
Margins were high back then. But I knew nobody was going to come in.
Computer is $2,000 or more.
Yeah, and margins were good. So I'm. It's blizzard. It's horrible. I'm locking the door, and I hear behind me, "Are you open?" No, sir, we're not. He said, "Let me put this another way. I have $10,000 to spend before midnight. Are you open?" Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I am. And my boss paid me. God bless him. He didn't want to. It was very clear he didn't want to. But he knew he'd made the deal, and we stuck to it.
We've taken a couple of calls like that already. You know, I got to spend my budget before the end of the year. What can you do for me?
Yep.
Spending money's not a problem.
Yeah. Hello. Come on.
We'll take your money. It's a match made in heaven.
Yeah.
So he did. He was good to me. And when I got home, I told my wife how much money I had made that day. And she said, okay, that's all right. That's all right. You can come in.
Glad you worked that late.
That's exactly right. But yeah, it was. But that guy was, you know, polite, and he knew he was. You know, it was after 6. He understood that he had gotten to me late.
Mm-hmm.
He was grateful that I was opening
willing
up
to
for
reopen,
him.
Yeah,
we made the transaction as fast and as calm as we could, and he spent his money before midnight, which is what he needed to do. And he said, "I don't even need it delivered until January. I won't even be in the store for the next." In my business, rather, for the next 2 weeks. but I need a receipt that says, you know, this date. I need the 31st on that receipt. I said, I can write you a receipt right now. I don't,
no problem there. Yeah.
So we did that, and it was fine. So that worked out. That worked out very nicely for everybody, but except my boss. But it did mean that, you know, it was a polite transaction. And then we have the people who come in and are nasty. And that's why I got out. I just don't care anymore. I don't care. I can't be polite to nasty people anymore.
Yeah, no.
Can't do it. So when you go out there, be nice. It's nice to be nice. Start a new trend. Get ahead of the curve. Be polite this holiday season to everybody. I don't care how tired you are, how miserable your day is. Be polite. See what happens. You smile at people, they smile back.
What was kind of interesting this year is that there weren't really that many computer deals.
No, there weren't.
There's no new chips. There's no, you know, much new of anything. And computer prices are already so low. Their margins are you know, razor thin anyway.
Well, like I said before, you know, you go into a lot of the stores. What few stores you can still go in and get computers.
Right.
You know, you don't see many desktops. Maybe one. And that's for a gamer.
Right.
Otherwise, they're going strictly to tablets and laptops. Everything is a laptop or a tablet because no more the boxes unless, you know, you've got, like I said, a serious gamer and you've got to have that advanced video card, more memory in it, and you need all that power and space. Or if you're into photography.
Right.
Saying you need the power as far as editing and storing thousands and thousands of video
and a couple
and
of gigantic
pictures.
Hard drives and that sort of thing. A
couple terabyte hard drives and all that, you know. Otherwise, the average laptop with a terabyte drive in it is more than enough for the average user.
Yep.
And they don't need anything more. And because everything, you know, is getting done up in the cloud. More and more folks are relying on storing stuff up there because of the versatility. I mean, you know, it's nice to be able to say, be here doing some stuff, and all of a sudden you travel, say, out west to visit family and that, and you want to pull up pictures. Huh, I log into my, on the computer, say, over the at grandma's house there, and go into my Google account, and I can show them all the photos that I want to show them, or right on my phone.
Right on your phone.
It's right there, and, you know, no muss, no fuss.
Yeah, yeah. It used to be, I remember, you know, we all used to carry pictures, or somebody'd show us pictures, and you had the wallets with the accordion thing in it.
You can fit a dozen if you're lucky.
And maybe you had a dozen, so you had to pick the ones, and now it's just, here's my phone, just keep swiping.
Yeah.
All right, that music tells me you've wasted an hour of your life with this nonsense, but do not go away because we're going to do it all over again. Going to take a slightly longer break, and then we'll be right back with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. It is 59 minutes after the hour, and you are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Holy cow! That must mean you're listening to Soundbites right here on the Truly Great. And we do remain truly grateful to you that we are member-supported. Jazz 90.1. We will see you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece, Rochester.
A public service of the Greece Central School District.
Jazz 90.1.
On Instagram at WGMC Jazz 901.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And you will be listening to the news in a moment. In an interview with Axios on HBO, Apple CEO Tim Cook explained the decision to use Google as the default search engine on Apple products. This decision has baffled some, considering Google's business model of making money off of users' data, something Apple has spoken out against numerous times. I think their search engine is the best, Cook said in the interview. He followed up by diving into privacy features Apple has implemented in its Safari browser. Look at what we've done with the controls we've built in, Cook stated. We have private web browsing. We have an intelligent tracker prevention. What we've tried to do is come up with ways to help our users through their course of the day. It's not a perfect thing. I'll be the very first person to say that, but it goes a long way to helping. Google pays Apple to have its search engine be the primary one on iPhones and other Apple devices. That's the real reason it's in there. The money that Apple makes from the deal funnels into the company's services business, which has been a consistent source of light for Apple in its recent quarterly financial reports. A Bloomberg report estimates that Apple may bring in between $3 and $9 billion from its Google licensing agreements. Let me read that sentence again. A Bloomberg report estimates that Apple may bring in between $3 and $9 billion with a B dollars from its Google licensing agreements, with the majority of analysts putting the number between $3 and $4 billion. That's still a lot of billions. Apple services business as a whole hit a big milestone, $10 billion in revenue during the final fiscal quarter of 2018. Pay attention, that means Google accounted for at least a third of Apple services business. They're not going to get rid of that. Yeah. They're just not. Cook also talked about the looming privacy regulations that may come to Silicon Valley. When asked if federal regulation is inevitable, Cook emphasized that he is not a big fan of regulation, but the companies have to recognize when the free market approach has failed. I'm a big believer in the free market, Cook said, but we have to admit when the free market is not working, and it hasn't worked here. I think it's inevitable that there will be some level of regulation. I think Congress and the administration at some point will pass something. So, which search engine do you use? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299 or toll-free at 1-800-790-0415.
There were rumors a few years ago that Apple was considering switching to Bing.
So right.
What was Microsoft paying them? And most of the outcry was, Microsoft, no!
Yeah, yeah, but people forget that it's not... It's not just a whim deciding what's going to be. Apple is being paid by Google to use their web search engine in their phones as a default in their phones and in their computers, and that's a good third, if not more, of their business side, of their services side, and the services side is what's keeping Apple alive right now, quite frankly. Their phones aren't selling the way they used to, and their computers aren't selling the way they used to. So what's left is the services, and that's that $3 to $10 billion is on the services side.
And you can switch your search into anything you want, but
right.
If you don't choose, it's Google.
Right. Right. And of the three, I much prefer Google. I don't use Bing at all.
Yeah.
And I've used DuckDuckGo a little bit, but not a great amount. DuckDuckGo is certainly more secure and more private and yada, 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 but it doesn't give me the results I want. So, you know, most of the time, and neither does Bing, quite frankly, so most of the time I'm on Google.
Mm-hmm. One of the ironies that I always find is that I like using Google because it's not full of ads.
Right.
But Google's the biggest advertiser because every other page is full of ads.
Yeah.
That's right.
Although they have done something interesting and annoying to some. When you get a Google result, let me see if it's doing it now. I'm getting the direct link because I'm logged in. Oftentimes when you point to a link, it's a Google referrer link.
Right.
So you don't go directly to the place. It sends it through Google, basically tracking and advertising first.
Right.
So they know you clicked on the link.
Right. And that's, you know, they keep track of that stuff for their own purposes. And you will often see when you search for something.
Boom. You're getting all that.
You get a bunch of ads in the results, but they are labeled as ads.
Yeah, Google's a little better about labeling ads than some of the other search engines, you know, that the and it's not the whole screen of ads. It's usually only two or three
along the side or something.
Right. And with a lot of the other search engines, well, actually, in this case, it is. Well, I'm getting pictures too. With some of the other search engines, you don't see what is an ad, and you don't see what the real search results are, you know, for longer down the screen.
Right.
Although Bing does let you put pretty pictures behind the screen.
Oop. Dee-doo.
Yeah.
Well, look, that's a bird standing on a turtle's head.
Whoop. Big, fudging.
Isn't it cute? Deal. So the turtle has a pet bird.
That's, you know.
Cute. Now I want to know where that picture's from.
Or could
so
you
Google
call
reverse it's image search?
Does it? Can you hover?
Or can you call that turtle now a bird brain?
Says, a Darwin finch on a giant tortoise in Galapagos.
There you go.
Restricted to wallpaper use only. So you can download it, but you have to use it only as wallpaper.
And they're going to come to your home and enforce that with bricks
mm-hmm.
and bats. Yeah, but yeah, I will
nope,
say
and
this.
It's got the Bing.
It's got the Bing logo.
The Bing bug.
Yeah, the Bing bug is there. Yeah. They've branded it. You will find that all the search engines give you similar results. I tend to find, excuse me, I tend to find when I'm looking for something a little esoteric, a little out of the ordinary, that I get much better results on Google.
Mm-hmm.
But you also have to know how to frame your request. You know, what they are calling Google Foo. The ability to know what keywords to look for
mm-hmm.
To narrow your search down quickly.
People will come to me, and I've been looking for this for an hour, and I type in one search phrase, and it's the second one on the list. How did you do that? I have no idea.
I have no idea. Exactly right. The other thing I like about Google is you can see on the Google search, when you go to Google's page, the little search box on the right is a microphone. If you click on that, you can say your search.
Mm-hmm.
You don't even have to type it. So you can click on it and say.
Especially if the search is intensive.
Thank you. Now that's what we have.
That's what it searched for.
That's what it
searched for. It heard me all the way over here?
Yes. I have a very, this is my Chromebook. It has a very good speaker. Hold on. Be quiet a second. Let me do this. Deals on Pixel phones. Boom, deals on Pixel phones, and here they come. It's just, you don't even have to type anymore.
Yeah.
Some of the cute things you can do, like with the search suggestions, you type in, how do I, and you get some crazy things.
Yeah.
Where can I?
Right, so you'll find that many of these things. And of course, Google also, and I think Bing does too, has the shopping and the news and the, so, you know, if you type in, you know, sadly, you'll always get a result when you type in mass shooting, but you can then click on the news section and you will see the latest news on those things as opposed to having to search through the listings for the latest news item.
They were saying, like anything else, you know, it's a double-edged sword. You know, being able to just click it, like you said, click on that microphone and just speak into it, and it gives you results. In the same token, it's also causing a dumbness of our society.
Yes.
Because people are forgetting how to write or even spell.
Right, right.
I mean, you look at some of these kids nowadays and they can't, you know, as far as putting together, you know, an essay or anything else, and their writing is atrocious.
Yeah, it really is horrible.
And, you know, being able to just speak into it is, you know, great. The technology is great, but, in this, you know, the other side of the coin, though, it's also making them dumber.
Right. I have I bought a t-shirt off of Woot, and in cursive, it says, if you can read this, you're old.
Yeah. And a lot of kids are writing text speak in their essays and papers.
Yeah, not in my classes.
Yeah.
I'll tell you that right now. Not in my classes. Not allowed. That is nonsense, and I don't take it. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Larry from Rochester, New York. What's up, Larry?
Good afternoon, guys. I think this might be more for Steve, but I guess it could be for anyone. I tried to download Mojave onto my, I think it's mid-2011 iMac, and it wouldn't go. However, I can download it on my MacBook Pro, and I did. What I'm wondering is whether or not that signals it's time for me to get a new iMac.
Well, of course.
Yeah.
Okay.
Silly question, Larry.
Yeah. So the iMac needs to be a 2012 or later for Mojave. So your choices are you don't upgrade, or you get a new machine, basically.
Or you put Linux on your old machine. Linux, yeah.
Or just open the command terminal window and leave that full screen.
There you go. That works for me.
As long as your computer is doing what you want it to do, there's no urgent need to upgrade. There will come a point when new software will require a Mojave. Right now, High Sierra, I think, is most of what we're seeing for a lot of the bigger requirements. Although, you know, Office 2019 is Sierra 10.12. I think Adobe Creative Suite is 10.12 also. And so it's going to be many years before programs will come out requiring 10.14. So that's usually when the decision gets a little more urgent, that if you want to buy this new program and it won't run on your old OS.
Okay, because right now my Mac still seems to be doing everything I need it to do.
Yep.
Plus, I like the fact that I can still put the CD-ROM in the side of it and a little, not the disc, but the chip or whatever it
DSD
is in the side
readers,
when I'm looking at movies or what have you. Not movies, but photographs. So I was just wondering if that meant that in a year from now they're going to say I can't upgrade to iOS or something like that, so I should start looking.
Well, on that iMac, yes, you can't upgrade the OS anymore, but it won't just magically stop working. We are seeing on iOS, iOS 12 goes back a long way. I think the iPhone 5, and we're on the 10 now, so that's, you know, five generations in phones, a long time. And this is in iOS, iOS 12 is the first OS to actually run better on the old phones. That they made that sort of a design priority to make the older phones run faster. So it will eventually happen, but you usually get, you know, at least 5 years or more. So on the iMac, it was a 2012, so that's, you know, 6 years.
Let's put this in perspective. Your mid-2011 iMac is a 7-year-old computer. Yeah.
So that's probably 70 to 100 years in human years.
Right, right. So it really owes you nothing. And I would say I agree with Steve. Use it until you need to upgrade it, but start putting your pennies away now.
And one of the things you may be able to do now, since it is still working, is you might be able to sell it for a few $100 and use that to
offset
the cost of a new machine.
Okay, because my daughter's already looking at it greedily to put Image Pro or something like that on it.
Yeah.
But I don't know. My iPad is already, it's not dead, but it won't take another iOS. So I don't know. It just seems like you have to continually upgrade these things.
Right.
Well, one of
all right. Well, it does seem though that I've got some. I still got a little bit of life in it. So because you've upgraded the RAM to I think 12 gigabyte and done some other things for me, so it's not like I don't have working room on it. I was just wondering if it's pretty much ready to put out the pasture now.
Well, and like I said, I know you're a Mac guy, but if you want to keep the hardware running, you can move to Linux when you can no longer upgrade the Mac OS operating system.
There's a thought. Because I do have made a bootable Linux disk, and every now and then I do run Linux on it, you know, just for the fun of it.
Sure.
That's an idea.
You know, at the point where you feel that you're starting to be unsecure, yeah? You know, you don't have the security updates anymore. You feel a little skanky getting on the internet with it. That's the time to say, I can either toss the hardware entirely, or I can put Linux on it, continue to use the hardware, and now play around in Linux and learn it that way.
And Apple is still offering security updates going back to 10.12.
Right, so you still have time.
Three versions, yeah.
Okay, because the moment I thought it wasn't secure, it would be done. I'd snatch it off the network in a heartbeat.
Yep. Right, that's when you can think about putting Linux on it.
Okay. Well, I just thought I would ask. I was tooling around early this morning before your show and just starting to ponder, is it time to get another one now? So,
well, start saving your pennies because it's coming.
Yep. Okay, well, thank you, guys. You helped my decision-making.
Thanks, Larry. Have fun.
Have a great day.
You too. Bye. Yeah, it's always hard to make the decision to get a new computer.
Although we like to say, do it before the old one dies completely.
Well, that's exactly the point. And what I was about to say was, we tend to make that decision when the old one doesn't boot.
Right.
And then, but we really need to make it earlier because you want to move things over. You want to make sure you got everything. Because you're going to forget something.
And you'll have a deadline.
I guarantee it. Right. I will put money down on the fact that you will have forgotten to move something.
Yep.
So buying the new one before the old one dies is a very, very good idea. And then you can run the two in parallel for a little while until you absolutely secure. What?
You. This is for you.
Okay.
It says, this is Elaine.
Uh-oh.
First Saturday off in a year, and I'm listening.
Uh-oh.
Yes. For God's sake, somebody please call in before Nick starts telling stories about Senna on Magic Mountain.
Oh, stop it. Stop it, my wife. I love my wife.
A little young Rob Litton.
I am only reading what is in front of me.
Thank you, honey. I love you, too.
Yep.
Which is the polite thing to say over the radio.
Yeah.
Yes.
But, yes, just because a new OS came out for your device doesn't necessarily mean you have to install it. You can keep, as long as the security patches are running for the OS you have. It's interesting that people want to have the latest thing. We are still seeing a lot of problems with the Mojave installer, even with the 14.1 patch that's come out. And excuse me. So it's not something you have to jump on immediately. Like we were saying earlier, wait a couple of weeks.
Right.
And let other people work the problems out first.
Right.
Yep. Don't be the pioneer.
Yeah. And Apple, we're a little annoyed. Apple says you only need 2 gigs of RAM to install the OS, which is technically true. You won't be able to do much of anything else. It will be so slow. You'll be yelling at it. But you couldn't do 2 gigs.
Well, it's no different than Microsoft. Right. Microsoft sits there and tells folks on some old Windows 7 machines, yeah, you can put it on there, which is a true statement.
Yeah. Yep.
Do you want to work on it? Oh, heck no.
Just remember, all the new computers come with 8 gigs minimum.
That's right.
that's probably a better minimum.
Yes, and that's really kind of required.
Yeah.
You really need to pay attention to not only what it is you do, but how quickly you need to do it. You know, if you're, we talked about that with Chromebooks too. If you buy a lower end Chromebook, you can do everything you want to do. You're just going to do it a little slower. But for $150, can you wait? Let me finish.
Yep.
If you can't wait, then you're spending $400, $500, $600. And you made that decision because of the speed that you want. There ain't no such thing as a free lunch. Lunches are getting cheaper, but they aren't free.
Hold on 1 second, because this leads right into that. I just got somebody just texted in. Any recommendations this holiday season for good deals on a mid-level 15-inch Chromebook? Thanks, Mike.
As we were saying,
yes. Go ahead. You were saying?
As we were saying earlier, there aren't the deals, you know, where you could get hundreds of dollars off aren't really happening anymore.
Right.
But a lot of the electronic stores are offering bits of a discount.
You got to do your homework.
One thing that I might suggest that people do. I like HP, but there's a 14-inch, but I like them. I like LG. I like the Dells are actually very nice. But if you go to google.com/Chromebook, you can see all kinds of things about the various thing. There are about 39 of them out there, and you can filter it. So, for example, I want large screen. There are 13 that are 14 or 15-inch. And they show them all here. The Dell Inspiron, which is a 2-in-1, which means that
flip the screen around the back.
Yeah, push the screen around to the back. Acer makes a 15-inch one, that doesn't do that. They also make a spin 15-inch one, that does do that. So it depends. Do you want just a Chromebook? Do you want a Chromebook that can also be a tablet? Those are two considerations you're going to make. So you can get everything. For a 14-inch, you can get starting in the $250 range, right? And you can go up to, geez and crackers, $700-$800 if you want to. But, you know, so you there's your price range, $250-$800. There you go. You're welcome, America.
Doesn't a Pixel go up to $2,000 if you max it out?
Well, but I don't think it's 14-inch.
Ah, yeah, that's 15-inch. 15, yeah.
Yeah. There are plenty of them there. And, again, at google.com/Chromebook, you can see lots and lots of machines. There's 30-some-odd of them. And of the,
yeah, 39, you said.
Yeah, and of the larger screen ones, there's over a dozen. So you can take a look, and you can easily compare them to each other and see what the features and stuff are. What's nice is that most of the new ones also have the Google Play Store, and if you do go to google.com/Chromebook, you'll see the ones, they'll have the little Play Store triangle in the block with the picture. So you can see which ones will also do, all the 14 and 15 inch ones do. That's interesting. But they will then not only do Chrome stuff, they will also do Google Play stuff. And many of the new ones, if you have enough RAM and enough disk space, we'll soon be able to run Linux apps as well.
It looks like Google has got a discount on their own Pixelbook, up to $300 off. So that's kind of the Pixelbook is kind of a higher end brand,
right?
With better specs in it.
Pixel is their high end.
Yep.
It was originally their The
reference model.
Reference model. Thank you very much. That other people then would build their stuff around. So the Pixel phone is the high-end Google phone. The Pixel book is the high-end Google Chromebook. And they're very nice machines. They're very nice machines. And right now slightly lower in price. But I don't know what the screen size is. I don't think it's 14 or 15 inches. I think it's 13 or 12. But because I'm never going to buy a $1,000 Pixel book, I don't know. I don't remember, but
well, if you win the lottery, you could.
If I win the lottery, I'll buy. Depending on which lottery I'll win, I'll buy everybody a Pixelbook. But the thing is that not everybody listening, not you. I like you, but not that much. Easy enough. But basically, the point here is that there are plenty of models that are out there. Most of them are very good. Oh yeah, there is a Pixelbook is a 14-inch machine, and it starts at $1,000. There it is.
It doesn't actually say on their website.
Yeah, you know, it does here in the google.com/Chromebook.
Right, in the overview, yeah. They give you the outer dimensions. Oh, there it is. It's 12. This the one I'm looking at is 12.3-inch.
Yeah,
which is a little small. But it's light, so that's sometimes the trade-off. You want light, or do you want a big screen?
Right, and that's certainly a part of it. I was looking at 14 and 15 inch things, so I don't know. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. Give us a call, and we'll chit-chat about life in general, or possibly even about computers. It's 29 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And I would like to thank my bride for giving me Santa flashbacks.
Now you have to tell the story.
Some frightening stuff. Not yet, I don't. We've got a whole month. We're going to go back to the phones instead, and we're going to talk to Rich from Irondequoit, New York. What's up, Rich?
Hello, guys. And Nick, just to throw that out there, I'll listen.
Thanks.
I'm having a little bit of a problem, and I don't know if you can help me with this or not. Using Google Docs and using the voice typing type feature.
Yeah.
I've taped some meeting things, and in order to make those into notes, I was wondering if I could transfer the voice of the tape utilizing Google Docs and that voice recognition. But it seems like when I start to play it, it'll go for a little bit, but then stop and not continue on.
Are you okay? So you go into Google Docs, you go under Tools, you select voice typing.
Correct.
Then you click the microphone that appears.
Correct.
And it works for a little while and then loses it.
Right, maybe for about a sentence or two, and then it loses it and doesn't get anything else. Now, if I stop the mic and start it again, it might go for a couple more words after that.
Okay, are you holding the tape recorder up to the microphone on the...
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Have you tried plugging it in?
Or close to it, you know, so it's trying not to make it distorted or anything like that.
Right. Have you tried plugging it in directly?
I have not tried that.
I would suggest you give that a try. I don't know that it'll work, but you should give it a try. What for the rest of you, what Rich is talking about is that in Google Docs, under Tools, there's something called voice typing. Excuse me. You select that, and now you can speak to it. You can essentially dictate. So I can say, "Hello, Google!" Exclamation point. How are you today? Question mark. New paragraph. So, comma. Let's do this. Period. That sort of thing. What Rich is talking about, of course, is he'll get most of the words in, but he'll have to then go back and edit it and turn it into sentences because it.
Yeah, sure.
Right.
But
he knows
that. Understand all that.
Right. The theory is it works pretty well. The clearer you speak, and the better your microphone. But the clearer you speak, the better it will be. It's actually quite excellent, but it isn't perfect. But what Rich is talking about right now, I'm so sorry. What Rich is talking about right now is the fact that it's kind of losing him, and I think that might be because you've gone down at least three levels, right? There's the actual voice. Had that voice gone right into your laptop, that would be level one, right? But it went into the tape recorder, which is level one. And then it went from the tape recorder. Now you're playing it back out the tape recorder. That's level two. And into the computer, that's level three. So if you can do it directly through a wire, right, a jack, plug a jack in at both ends, the speaker jack on the tape recorder to the microphone jack on the Chromebook or whatever computer you've got, you probably will get a stronger and better signal because it's just going to be better, you know,
right.
Particularly
now,
if
the... The other question, though, is there any kind of timeout for that speaking for it to go on? In other words, it'll only be active for, say, a minute or 2 minutes, whatever.
No, I've spoken for 10 minutes. I've not honestly gone longer than that. God knows I can, but I haven't. but it should just keep picking up. As long as it hears something, right? I mean, if there's a long pause in your recording, then it may think, oh, they're done.
Okay.
But in general, you know, the way we're speaking now, even with a pause somewhere in the middle of the sentence, it's not going to be long enough to make Google Docs think something's happened.
And right, I could just be watching that as it's doing it and re-energize the microphone again and
right.
Let it continue on or whatever, if there is a period of time of silence, if you will.
Right, exactly.
And I just found a service from Google, Cloud Speech to Text, where you upload your file, it transcribes it, and gives you the text.
Oh, that might even be better.
Right. It's not free. You can try it for free.
50 meg limit for free.
Right.
I don't think it's that much, but okay.
Right. So if you can get that recording to a file, and it may, I don't know what your recorder was. If it was a digital recorder, it's already a file, right?
Right.
If you can get it to a file, you can upload it to Google's text-to-speech system. And Steve is putting a link on our on Soundbites.
Well, I could probably just put it into, like, Audacity, copy it off the recorder from there.
Exactly.
And, you know, put it in whatever format they want it for and then upload it to them that way.
Perfect.
Yeah. Cool. Well, thanks for the help in that. And you know, I'll be looking forward to hearing that story about Santa.
Okay. Thanks, Rich. Don't hold your breath, buddy. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Of course, there's nothing that can beat an actual transcriptionist who's trained for it.
Right. Obviously, a transcriptionist is going to do the best job. But as a second thing, I've done that in meetings where I've taken my Chromebook and turned it on. The problem is people who are kind of mush-mouthed, I guess, mm-hmm. or slur their words or, you know, speak really softly. I can't hear them anyway. I'm mostly deaf. But those people have the Google has trouble hearing those people or understanding those people. But if you, I spent 20 years as a professional actor, so I can speak clearly and succinctly when I need to, or at least distinctly. I'm rarely succinct, you can easily Google can easily translate what I say. But you should give it a try. It also, it depends on the ambiance in the room, obviously. It depends on how good your microphone is, how well you speak, yada, yada, yada. But I've transcribed whole lectures and things, just by turning in the microphone and letting it play while I'm doing stuff. It's actually pretty cool. I haven't tried it off my phone yet. I may have to do that at some point.
Give it a shot.
I've got it on a list of things to try and, you know those lists.
Mm-hmm.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Paul from Henrietta, New York. What's up, Paul?
Hello, gentlemen. Thank you for your service to the community.
Thank you.
Here's the question. On my laptop, when I view Facebook pictures in general, the resolution is really terrible versus, like, I'm on my laptop now, New York Times, the pictures are all, you know, very good. On my phone, Android, on my tablet, the Facebook pictures all look decent or good. Why would this be? Why would the resolution be poor generally? I'm looking at one picture on Facebook that's a smaller. It's almost like when they're large.
Yeah.
When
it's pixelated a little bit.
Yeah. What? This is a laptop, desktop?
Yeah. Well, I've got two laptops, and it does that with each.
Have you checked the resolution?
I don't know what the remedy is. Not that it's more curious than anything.
It's probably only
video resolution.
Well, it's downloading a low res version on your phone, so it doesn't eat up your cellular bandwidth.
Okay. So on the phone, though, it looks good. And that's what I'm saying. The Android and on my tablet. It's my laptop that anything that's
let me,
a picture that
what,
takes something like the, yeah.
What web browser are you using?
Chrome.
Huh. Just for the heck of it, try Firefox or Edge. Why not? It's already on your system. And see if there's a something, if it works there. If it does, then it's likely that at some point either you purposely set or Facebook just decided to set something, a cookie in your system that says he wants low-res pictures on this device.
Well, I'm wondering about just the overall screen resolution of the system.
Well, yeah, but he said they look fine in other, if he goes through a different site.
Hold on.
If you go, if you're on your laptop and you go to another site that has pictures, do they look good?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's okay. Just the Facebook, I'm trying to get away from Facebook, so maybe.
Yeah, there you go. This may get you there.
A blessing in disguise.
Right, but what is possibly happening is that at some point, like I said, either you accidentally said or Facebook just decided that you wanted low-res pictures on that device.
Yes.
So what you can do, first test this hypothesis by trying a different browser.
Yeah, okay.
Then what you can do is empty your cache and delete all your cookies, which means now you every time you go somewhere, you're going to have to re-log in again.
Yeah.
But what that would do is if that's the problem, it'll clear it out.
And are these photos that you've uploaded or photos from other people?
No. And they tend to be, like, here's what I'm realizing, is photos that have been uploaded by friends that are of a modest size, almost like postage stamp, are fine. It's more like large pictures.
Definitely sounds like your Facebook thinks you want only low res.
Yep,
pictures of bigger than a certain size should be low res only.
And there's also an issue at the other end when the person uploads a photo, they choose what resolution to send it at, and if they don't choose right, Facebook picks for you.
Yeah.
Well, right. But if it's happening with everybody, it's probably something at your end.
Okay. Well, thank you again, gentlemen, and have a good afternoon.
You too. Good luck.
Okay. Bye.
Yep. Facebook. But Mark Zuckerberg is in trouble. He really is. People are unhappy with him. All over the place, as a matter of fact.
I thought he apologized.
He did. People don't care.
And then he makes another mistake and apologizes again.
That's exactly right. He just keeps making mistakes, and people aren't happy. The EU is really unhappy. In fact, they demanded that he come and talk to them, and he chickened out and sent somebody else. Coward. but he sent somebody else instead. He didn't want to talk to him. Didn't want to be bothered. But there aren't really alternatives. Instagram's not an alternative because it's owned by Facebook. You know?
They haven't come up with the...
Google Plus is going away. They're taking it down. But what fascinates me is that for businesses, Google Maps is turning into the place for businesses do social media.
That's what we use for, I mean, the software that we use.
But what I mean is I can go into Google Maps now, right? Mm-hmm. And I can put in a review through Google Maps. Mm. I can put in a comment through Google Maps. And the company at the other end answers through Google Maps.
Oh.
So it's not like we don't go to their Facebook page anymore. We go to their Google Maps page site.
Which is so annoying as a company, because now it's another site we have to go to check.
Exactly. Yeah. But what the difference is, you're not getting the nonsense of Facebook
yet, and
like that. So they're discovering that it's a better place, and it's a simpler place to do that stuff. And of course, you're not inundated with a million other things while you're there as well.
As most folks, as you hear more and more folks, they're just getting away from Facebook. I know myself, it's like, it's there, but 99% of the time I ignore what's there because just tired of, too many people live their lives there.
Boy, ain't that the truth.
And, and all... like my grandfather always told me, you know, opinions are like belly buttons. Everybody's got one.
And they're full of lint.
Yeah. And, you know, it's like, all right, already, you know, how much can you beat a dead horse? Or this opinion or that opinion? You know what? I just choose to stay away from it all. And it's like a lot easier.
Yep. Yep. The only real social media sites I use are the ones my daughter's on, just on the off chance that I'll catch a glimpse of something she does there, since she never talks to her parents. That's not true. We Skyped on Thanksgiving. That was very
sweet.
She's
a busy young lady.
She's a very busy young lady, and it was very, very nice.
At least it's not only when she wants money.
Not only. That's right.
That's the thing about kids, right? It was, you only hear them when they want money.
Yeah. She's the one who informed me that using Gmail, you can send people money. She also reminded us that she's got wish lists at Amazon for Christmas.
There you go.
Yeah, my wish lists are at Amazon, Horizon Hobby, and Apogee Components.
Right.
For rockets. Rockets, right. Airplanes, and everything else. Yeah.
Right. Rockets, airplanes, and now I don't care.
Yeah.
Because
Amazon doesn't sell everything.
Yes.
Yes, that's true.
Yet. We should probably mention that Apple is considering creating a lower-cost Apple TV dongle that's similar to the Amazon Fire Stick or the Google Chromecast. Apple has held discussions about introducing such a product, which would be priced lower than the Apple TV and would be able to be plugged into the back of a television set. Apple is said to be contemplating such a hardware device to promote an upcoming streaming service that's in the works. Everybody's got their own streaming service now. A lower-cost Apple TV dongle would make the service, which will be available only on Apple devices, more accessible to potential buyers. Right now, Apple's only television product is the Apple TV, priced at about $180 for the Apple TV 4K and $150 for the non-4K version. Current TV dongles from Amazon and Google are priced lower, at like $25 to $35. Rumors have suggested Apple is planning to roll out a streaming service next year, perhaps as early as March, and is set to launch in more than 100 countries in 2019. Apple may offer the streaming services on a standalone basis or bundle it with Apple Music or an Apple News subscription that includes Texture, the magazine service that it just purchased. Original television content created by Apple could be made available for free to iPhone, iPad, and Apple TV users through the TV app. Apple is also negotiating deals to provide access to subscription channels like HBO and Starz. For its streaming service, Apple has more than a dozen original television shows in the works, and it has inked deals with production companies for movies. So which streaming services do you subscribe to? And do you really want yet another one? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. And, of course, you know, Disney now is taking all the Marvel stuff off of its... whoa, Dave, careful. You almost pulled the phone off what do you call that, table? Disney is now starting their own channel. They're going to put all the Marvel stuff on it. DC is starting their own streaming service for all the DC stuff. We still have Netflix and Hulu and name it. About a million other things. And so yet another one, Apple streaming service. Who knows? And we got Google TV and everything else. I'm shocked Facebook doesn't have a streaming service yet.
Give them time.
It's a great time to be an actor.
Yeah.
I'll tell you that's a writer.
And that's how we're hearing about a lot of these shows that are coming, because Hollywood can't keep quiet about, I just got this job. And
Yeah, getting jobs for actors is few and far between. So
what is it? It's one of the only industries that has a 99% unemployment rate.
Yep. No, they're all employed as waiters.
Yeah, waiters.
I did a lot of that myself.
Did you have a screenplay?
I have a screenplay. Yeah. What I really want to do is direct. There's just plenty of those services out there. People are confused as to about what to do and how to get it. Everybody wants to cut the cord. But when you figure out which streaming service you need, and it becomes a pain in the neck, and can I get the thing I want? And, you know, I watch Dancing with the Stars every Monday at 8:00. And how am I going to watch it? And what channel is it on? And can I stream it? It becomes difficult to make a decision, to figure out, because there are so many variables. And, you know, people say to me all the time, which streaming service should I get? I don't know what you watch.
Yeah.
Don't even know what you watch. Tell me.
Take a piece of paper, write down the shows you watch and the networks you watch. But now, don't just say Channel 8 at 10 o'clock. That doesn't help any.
But see, that's where all these services, though, that's the whole thing. A lot of them, you know, you can get the other channels, but your local ones, you're going to be on the hook to get an antenna to get those.
Right. You're almost always going to have to get at least two services. To get all the channels you want. We joke about this. The most convenient thing is cable TV, because that's where most of the channels are. And then add Netflix, and then you've got Hulu, and then CBS if you want to watch Star Trek, and Netflix if you want to watch Marvel. And
right. So
there's too many of them.
Right. Some of them do have local. Google TV has local stations here in Rochester. All right, that music tells me we're done for another week. I want to thank everybody. I can't believe it's over already. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to apologize to everybody to whom we did not get. Call earlier. Call often. It's the Chicago way. Don't go away. George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. Michael's here to keep him on the straight and narrow. And we will be back next week with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. It is 55 minutes after the hour, and you've been listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in 166 hours.
Ready to become a member of Jazz 90.1? It's easy to do, and it feels so good. Just call 966-5299. That's 966-JAZZ, or pledge securely online at jazz901.org. And remember to check if you work for a company that matches donations. This could double or even triple your pledge. Anytime is a good time to become a member of Jazz 90.1.